All right, so tonight we get to do NTI Romans chapter 4, which for me in the Kindle is on page 265. How about you guys?
Yeah.
265 in the paperback as well. All right, here we go. Holy Son of God, there is one thing that you must know. You are loved. You are deeply and truly eternally treasured and loved. This love that has extended you from God and through God is not extended you for what you do. Therefore, this love cannot be stopped because of what you do not. God's love extended to you is eternal because God's love extended through you is extended for what you are. There are no criteria on which this love is dependent. You are, and so you are loved. And this love is eternal. Existence is love. And love is existence. You are loved because God created you existence. In creating you, I'm going to start over at 13 to 15. Existence is love, and love is existence. You are loved because God created you existence. In creating you, God extended himself. In extending his truth, that which is enrichment was enriched further. So in your existence, God himself is enriched. This is why you are his joy. You are his own enrichment. And that which enriches God must be enrichment itself. No part of you is absent from God's enrichment, for every part of you exists. Every part of you is a part of God's joy. Every part of you is welcome in the heart and smile of God, because every part of you is his heart and his smile without exception and without reservation at all. God's love is his promise to you. And God's love is eternal. It cannot be taken back, nor does he will that it be taken back. God himself is grateful to you for your existence, because you are the extension of his own love. And in the extension of his love, he finds his glory, and he calls that glory you. So that's the first part of the love letter. We'll go on, but I didn't want to stop in the middle of the chapter to talk because do you think it's beautiful? I think it's beautiful. Totally beautiful. Yeah, that's why I said this is going to be a warm, fuzzy night, you know? But basically, the gist of it is that you're loved simply because you exist. It's your existence itself that's holy, right? And so, you know, one of the exercises that I may have done it with you guys before, that I sometimes do with people is, you know, I ask them to look around the room at the people that are in the room, and, you know, we know each other. So just, you know, for a moment, think of everything that makes us different. You know, you can look at physical things that make us different, you know, personality things that make us different, interests that make us different, habits that make us different, whatever you know. Just kind of catalog, you know, what makes Dave different than Priscilla and Tom different from Danielle, and then take all of that and wad that up and throw it away. What's left?
Acceptance.
But as far as the being itself, what's left?
Spirit.
Just the isness, yeah, the spirit. I mean the life, the existence, right? Everything that makes us different is unreal. That isness is our only reality. And that isness is the same as God's isness. And it's that isness that makes us holy and loved. right? Just the isness itself. And if you take a rapist, a horrible, you know, in the world's terms, a horrible rapist, he rapes, you know, little children, he's raped many, he hurts them, you know, just think of this horrible guy. Horrible guys. The worst guy you can dream of. And then think of this, you know, minister who's also a great philanthropist. He gets people involved, you know, lots of people are helped, right? But what do they have in common?
The isness.
The isness. And so what this is saying is you're not loved because of what you do. You're not loved because you're the great philanthropist that gets lots of people involved helping others. Therefore, you can't, that love can't be taken away because of what you do not, because you're the horrible rapist. You know, because you're not even loved for those things. You're loved for your, just because you are existence.
And it just slices through duality right there.
Also. Right there.
Good and bad, you know.
Good and bad.
Duality, all the other opposites, you know. Just
completely meaningless.
Yeah.
The worst guy in the world and the greatest, you know, Jesus and Hitler are often examples, right? Mm-hmm. Jesus and Hitler, same isness. Mm-hmm. And that's what God loves, is that. That extension of itself. And not only does it love it, this describes it as being grateful for it, enriched through it, right?
And it, to me, that this, and it's always been, there's one part of the Bible, that the prodigal son, it kind of reminds me of. The son who goes away and gets into all kinds of mischief.
Hitler, yeah, Hitler.
Squanders it and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then he comes back, and his father receives him with such gratitude that, and this is my perception, that he didn't really express to the stay-at-home son,
yeah.
You know, to the son who stayed home and decided to play it safe. And but when his other son returned, he was just so grateful, you know, and it's just because as he goes out, he is that's his extension.
Yeah.
That God is able to extend in that way and express and manifest.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of what this reminds me of.
Yes, yes. Were you going to say something, Jacqueline?
Oh, I was going to say what a contrast it was, and we were talking about this before we started the recording, what a contrast it was with A Course in Miracles, because while the Course talks a lot about guilt, it can instill that guilt because it talks about this tiny man idea and how, you know, everything was great as long as we were all in this one isness together and aware of it. But then we went off, for God's sakes, you know. And this is saying God's grateful to you for that. So it's
and also this is really for me anyway, it emphasizes that there really was no going out. I mean, no matter who you think you are, no matter whether you're the biggest sinner on the planet Earth or the biggest saint, no matter who you think you are, the isness is still there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't have error without the foundation of isness. Something has to exist before it can make a mistake. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The isness is always present. The isness has never changed. I mean, that's the amazing thing about it. So everything else is like an overlay on top of the isness. But it doesn't affect the isness. And when you eventually take everything away, the isness is still there, completely unchanged.
But it talks about God being grateful for that extension.
Yes,
so
yes.
For a change in the changelessness.
Well, yeah, sure.
So isn't that what's different? NTI calls expression of the Son of God, and God Himself is grateful for our expression.
Yeah, and for the freedom.
Freedom.
Yeah, it's the freedom that is loved, and so therefore the expression of freedom also has to be loved, right? How can you love freedom and then damn you for expressing it?
That's
if you love freedom, then you also have to love the expression of freedom.
Yeah, and that's kind of like what I'm getting from enrichment.
Yeah,
you know, from the word enrichment is just like you know the expression. You know, it just makes it so, you know, much more rich. And this is, I don't know if it's from a human perspective or a spiritual perspective, but I feel that sense of enrichment, it makes it richer and deeper and more fertile. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I love what it says. You have to be enrichment yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be enrichment yourself because
right.
You're the extension of God's enrichment. But But yeah, I mean, I think that what's difficult for us to fathom, if not downright impossible, when we're, with our thinking minds, is love that perfect. You know, we think right. Love has to have a line. You know, like you can love me up to here, but when I cross that line, your love must stop. That's, and what this is describing is there ain't no line. There's no line. You're loved just because you exist. What you do with that existence does not affect the love. You know? And as you continue to exist, what you're calling the going out, right? That's continuing to exist. If I love you for your existence, I have to continue to love you as you continue to exist. Because it's the existence itself that I love. You know, your existence didn't stop when you started playing a game, you know? So there's just no way that God can stop loving us. It's an impossibility. And that makes, you know, if we ever get that, it makes things a lot easier for us, especially we were talking about how, you know, learning to follow intuition, but one of the things that keeps us from even trying to follow intuition is the fear that we'll be wrong. But if we realize we're loved no matter what, then we can have the, then we can go out and try, right?
There is a point, for me, is a point of confusion. When they talk about creation, God's creation, and you know, it's eternal. You know what I mean? So creation, it's always been, it always is. So when it talks about creation, you know, to me, it's like the only thing that can be created is created in form.
Yeah. Well, that's the Course in Miracles. You will find NTI using the word create a little differently. So, because NTI just uses, NTI does not distinguish between the words create and make, like the Course does. So NTI will talk about sometimes creating experience, like judgment creates experience. It doesn't mean that experience is eternal.
Right.
So it doesn't have that same vocabulary definition that was given to it in the Course. So you'd have to read the context of the sentence when you're reading NTI.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and then again, I kind of look into this and, you know, you're God's creation.
Yeah, in that sentence, then that would be eternal.
Right.
Yeah, in that sentence. Yeah, and in creating you, God extended himself. So that in that sense, that would be the eternal it's talking about.
See, I still get kind of confused with that because...
Oh, I think I know why you're confused, I think, because okay. You don't know who you are. When it says you, you're thinking Tom.
No, oh, that's... you know, it says... God created you, and I'm thinking even if it is spirit, yeah. It's like spirit always existed, and can you create more spirit?
Oh, well, these are, you have to use words. I mean, you know, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to use words and ideas right. In order to talk to a mind that has an ego and is right. Trying to undo it, yeah. Right? So sometimes you have to be careful. In fact, sometimes you have to be careful about taking spiritual books literally. Mm. Spiritual books are always written symbolically. There's no way the truth can be literally put in words. It's impossible.
Right.
Okay, it's impossible. So all spiritual books are symbolic. And if you start taking spiritual books literally, at some point you're going to get yourself tied into a knot.
Yeah.
Well, so what you want to do more when you're reading this is get the feeling of what the words are communicating beyond the thinking mind. Like when I was reading, if you weren't specifically listening to the words that hard, what was the feeling that was generated when I read this chapter to you?
Oh, it was just embracing.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, yeah.
You know, what this chapter is trying to communicate, regardless of the words used, is this chapter trying to tell you there's not a thing in the world you can do wrong. You are perfectly loved, and you're not perfectly loved because of the human or because of the human's actions. You can't, you know, it's not because of the good actions that you're loved or the bad actions that you're not loved. You're loved because you exist. That's it.
And have always existed.
And, yeah, that's what it's trying to say. You know, that's the message it's trying to send, and it's trying to send that into a mind that really doesn't believe that yet. And so it uses symbolic, flowery ideas, like God extended himself, and, you know, because it has to use some kind of ideas. Right. How do you reach a mind without ideas? But the general feeling that those words are painting, that's the general feeling. That's what it's really trying to teach. It's trying to teach you that there's nothing you can do. Nothing you can do that puts you out of God's favor. There's nothing you can do. And like, it's got to hammer that point because we don't believe it. We like, yeah, there is. Yeah, there is. There's something I can do.
I know exactly what you're saying. It is, every time that love comes up against my heart, there's like, sure? Like, and instead of just, you know, just letting yourself melt into that acceptance, that's a real important point right there.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to say, okay, I'm going to take you up on that. I'm going to put my foot on that and put my weight on it and see. And then when you put your weight on it is when you really start to feel it. You know, when you really trust it.
Yes. Well, let's try the next chapter because it's the second half of this love letter. God's love is not unknown to you because God's love lies in you. You are God's love, and God's love is your truth. Nothing can change this fact because you are the extension of His love. Through the extension of love, you were created, and so you were created love, and love is what you are. God's truth has no end, and so it has not ended in you. You are the truth of God in your existence. There is no end to His truth, so there is no end to you. You are forever blessed in the heart of God, forever His joy and His smile. No sin shall cross your mind because there is no sin in you. You are the perfect and sinless Son of God that lives with Him now and forever. I am going to stop there because I remember writing sentence 5 and just not believing it at all. No sin shall cross your mind? The hell yeah, sin crosses my mind. Yeah, exactly. But see, that's our interpretation. You know, if you go back to the realization of the idea of freedom, that freedom itself is loved, right? Well, then that thought that crosses the mind, no matter what it is, if that thought is just freedom, it's not sin. Who's the one judging it as sin? Right? Who's judging the thought as sin? Who judged the tiny mad idea as sin?
The ego.
Yeah, the ego. This is saying that no sin can cross your mind. It's not saying you won't have what you call sinful thoughts. It's saying those sinful thoughts aren't sins. Right? There's nothing you can do. Right? There's nothing you can do. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I can agree with you.
But?
and I can even get on that bandwagon. But it's kind of like at some point during the week or something like that, I'm going to have a thought that I go, I choke with, and I go, that one's sin. I can't, you know.
Right.
And it's just, I guess at that point we just have to stop and remind ourselves, just to reapply that thought process.
Yeah, you can do that. And I'll tell you what I did. Again, it may not work for you because we're a little different. But what I did when I was going through the phase you're talking about, you can feel like, oh, I shouldn't have thought that thought. That thought is sin, right? Then I learned to say, wait a minute, who just called that thought a sin? I started learning that I was the one labeling it. You know, there wasn't some God here saying that's a sin. It was me.
Okay, that's good.
I was the one labeling it. And then we project that label onto God.
That's what causes the sense of hurt.
And we project that label. But this is God. This is God. God is.
God says, have fun.
God says, no sin shall cross your mind, right? Because there is no sin in you. You are the perfect and sinless Son of God that lives within Him now and forever. As I have told you, the world was made by guilt, but guilt is not sin. Guilt is only the belief in sin. But I come to you as God's holy and ordained messenger to tell you that in His eyes, you have not sinned. In his knowledge, you have not moved from his heart. In his awareness, you remain forever a part of his smile. One thought of guilt was born into your mind through one judgment of yourself for something you did not do. This, then, is imagined guilt, multiplied in the world through your belief in what you made. But that which is untrue is nothing, and nothing multiplied infinitely still remains nothing. Therefore, all of the guilt that you perceive to be a part of the world and to be a part of you remains what it has always been. It remains nothing, multiplied as nothing, and so it is forever and under all circumstances, nothing. Is that clear? It's not very often that math comes through Regina the scribe, but that's pretty clear. You know, it's nothing. And again, if you learn to focus on the isness, again, you can see that it doesn't matter, you know, what you believe about yourself. It doesn't matter, you know, what you do in this world, how much you hurt yourself or how much you hurt others. That isness is still isness. It's still pure. You know, it doesn't is in any way other than just being. You know, being just is. So, and if that's what God's eyes are on, that is forever unchanged. It's forever unchanged. Nothing need not be atoned for, and nothing need not be forgiven because it is nothing. It does not exist in the eyes of God. Nothing need be done to erase that which is nothing because it is already nothing. Therefore, through your being you are atoned. Through your truth you are forgiven. For never have you not been atoned, and never have you not been forgiven, because never has a state existed that was anything but your perfection. So again, many of us get the idea that, you know, and in fact, the Course even calls it accepting the atonement for yourself. Many of us get the idea that we will be atoned when we finally let go of all of our false beliefs. Let go of our attachments. Like, then we'll be atoned. This is saying, that's not true. You're right now, you're perfect and atoned. You don't have to do anything. The reason that you want to let go of your false beliefs and your false attachments is because you're not happy. That's a different story. You're not happy. And, you know, you'll find your perfect happiness, you'll find your perfect joy by letting go of that which doesn't make you happy. But you're not doing it to become perfect in God's eyes. You're not doing it to be forgiven for being a sinner. Because you've never been a sinner and you're perfect right now.
Got it up here. Got it a little bit.
Still going to go home and call yourself a sinner though.
If we could all truly accept this,
yeah.
I think we just, this room would light up and it all disappears.
Well, and the funny thing is, some people believe, and again, it's a belief that if everybody accepted this, they think that what people would do is then I can just, you know, do whatever to him because I'm innocent, right? But that it actually isn't what happens. What happens is you become that which you are.
Right. You wouldn't want anything else.
You wouldn't ever want to do anything else. You naturally become that which you are. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the
right.
An ego
confusion. Take this consciousness and put it up here with these rights.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, it's the ego's idea of what spirit would be like.
Yeah.
Right.
That's good.
But no, Ramana Maharshi said, I can't remember the whole quote, so I'm going to have to screw it up a little bit. I know, remember that some of the words he used were right action. The first part of the quote I don't remember, but the gist of it is the right mind brings about right action. I don't know if he said right mind. He may have used a different term. But the right mind brings about right action. So when you're in the right mind, guess what? You act like a right mind. That's what you act like. You know, you don't act like a wrong mind when you're in the right mind.
Yeah.
When you know,
consistent.
Yeah, when you know who you are, you act like who you are.
Like and like.
Yeah.
I read somewhere one time about Jesus. Jesus allowed himself to be totally loved by God. Thus he could become anything but totally for God.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about.
That's what we're talking about.
We allow ourselves to be loved. We can't ever think of being loved.
That's right. That's right.
Which is love.
That's right. So by accepting you're not a sinner, that you've never sinned, that you're perfect right now, and accept, really accepting that into your heart, then you just act from that. Verses 20 to 21. The rules and options that you have made allow for your continued judgment. But your judgment is not God's judgment. Therefore, your judgment is nothing real. And what is not real cannot make real. Your judgment is not real, and so your guilt is not real either. This is the truth that you deny. God asks you to accept your truth, as there is no fear in truth. Fear is the product of fantasy. So again, we're the ones that are determining that, you know, that we're sinners, that we're guilty, that we did something bad. And then we get stuck in the wrong mind with those thoughts. We're stuck in ego with those thoughts. And therefore, we act from ego. All we need to do is shift into the right mind, and we act from the right mind. But we can't shift from the right mind if we keep believing who ego says we are. Now, you can't believe you're guilty and be in your right mind, too. You can't believe you're a sinner and be in your right mind, too. You can't be in the wrong mind and the right mind, too. Right? It's one or the other.
You can't be drunk or sober.
Yeah, at the same time. You can't be drunk and sober at the same time.
See, why didn't you just say it that way,
Regina? Because you understand that. Yeah. So the funny thing is, we believe heavily that we're guilty. We believe happily that in some way we sin, that we do things that are wrong, that we're bad. And the whole time we're believing that heavily, the ego's got us in the ego. We're in the wrong mind.
I see a helpful sentence right here.
Okay.
Number four. Maybe close, sentence four.
Your judgment is not real. And I would stop right there. Your judgment is not real, and then go to the next sentence. This is the truth that you deny.
Yeah.
You know, because the guilt, when I hear, for me it takes it back a step. Your judgment is not real. And the guilt has a lot of gravity. You know, the judgment, when I see that the judgment is not real, your judgment is not real, this is the truth that you deny, then I can move on to, the guilt or whatever else shows
yes,
up.
Yes.
But your judgment is not real. This is the truth that you deny. For me, that's just comforting.
Yes.
The whole thing is comforting.
Yeah.
So probably, I think the main point of these two chapters is, it's not saying don't do your spiritual practice, because remember, God's will for us is perfect happiness. And what happens when we're stuck in the wrong mind is we're not happy. So the reason for doing your spiritual practice is to become happy. But what we want to do is let go of the idea that the reason for doing our spiritual practice is to become good. Right? That's the mistake we make, that, I will be good someday. And that's the idea we need to let go of. That someday I'll wake up and then I'll be good, or then I'll be good enough. And, we really do. We have this whole guilt thing about not being awake. We think that we're bad for experiencing ourselves as something different and an illusion. But when we're thinking we're bad, we're in judgment. And if we're in judgment, where are we? In the wrong mind. So this week, probably, a very subtle practice would just to be to notice whenever you are believing that you are bad, And also that other belief that, and then someday when you do enough spiritual practice, you'll be good. and notice those thoughts and how we tell ourselves those things, right? And then remember, actually, I'm perfect right now. God says I'm perfect right now. I trust that. The reason for the spiritual practice is to become happy, right? Happy, not good. I'm already good. I'm absolutely free. Sin cannot cross my mind. That I'm the one that decided that thought was sinful. God says it's not because I'm absolutely free. All these fantasies are just freedom, right? I'm already perfect, but I'm not already happy. And that's the purpose for the work.
Freedom
of
self-bondage.
Yeah.
What you just said would have been like the first lesson that we ever did. And the first lesson in the Course in Miracles as well.
Yeah.
It would have simplified my beating myself up.
Yeah. All right, so I will turn off the recorder. And next week's lessons are pretty cool too, by the way. So, I think it'll be fun as well. I also love chapters 6 and 7 in Romans very, very much. But I'm going to turn off the recorder and we'll have a little bit of silence.